Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
And welcome back to part two of our exciting special on the real life at CSI with Armand AJ4IC. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Yeah, that answers the question and makes me wish I was a identical twin. Just kidding there, but WA1MXI, back to net.
But let's talk about fingerprints. How is fingerprinting done? How is the analysis done? What's the fingerprinting process? Are the processes for collecting fingerprints, data, evidence, blood, different for the variances of the crimes? Tell us about the shoe and the tire marks. Are they identifiable as just like fingerprints? And how about bullets and the shell casings? So maybe you can come aboard and tell us about that. But the technique of fingerprinting is known as dactyloscopy, and I may have pronounced that wrong, Armand, so you may want to correct me on that. But until the advent of digital scanning technologies, fingerprinting was done using ink and a card, and Armand told us about that, and Mike's going to tell us from firsthand the experiences he's had. I've not often been fingerprinted, only once, in fact, and that was when I was being hired into St. Lucie County down here in Florida as a school teacher. It was done by a computer. It was digital. They took a laptop and they did the fingerprints. I think they did each of my fingers. And so I want you to tell us, Armand, how it was done previously, how it's done today. So what is an ink fingerprint from years ago? And, you know, Armand told us, ink and a card. And we want to know about the digital. And you maybe, Armand, you can also talk to us about visible and latent prints. I'll try to just touch on it slightly. But I'm going to give you an explanation of what I think the ink fingerprint was. Now, to create an ink fingerprint, the person's finger is first cleaned with alcohol to remove any sweat and dry it thoroughly. The person rolls his or her fingertips in ink to cover the entire fingerprint area. Then each finger is rolled onto prepared cards from one side of the fingernail to the other. These are called rolled fingerprints. Finally, all fingers of each hand are placed down on the bottom of the card at a 45-degree angle to produce a set of plain or flat impressions. These are used to verify the accuracy of the rolled impressions. Now that's when they use the ink. Now today, the digital scanners capture an image of the fingerprint. To create the digital fingerprint, a person places his or her finger on an optical or silicon reader surface and holds it there for a few seconds. The reader converts the information from the scan into digital data patterns. The computer then maps points on the fingerprints and uses those points to search for similar patterns in the database. So, law enforcement can analyze fingerprints they find at a scene of a crime. And what I want Armand to talk about is the visible prints and the latent prints, and maybe he can just share that with us.
Thank you, Kathy. You're absolutely right. Fingerprints have not lost their importance just because DNA is here. DNA is just another thing. We can get fingerprints into a trial that is beautiful evidence. Fingerprints are usually divided into a couple of categories. The term latent means invisible. We have to go searching for them. That's what the powder does. If someone comes into a building, a burglary, by entering through a broken window or something, we know where they came in from. Well, it's a matter of checking that area with black powder in the hopes that we'll be able to develop a latent print. Now then, if the person touches a piece of glass or a mirror and we can see the fingerprint, that is called a patent fingerprint. It's latent with a P. Patent simply means it's visible. It's right there. There's a third type of fingerprint called plastic. If you were to touch putty or something that's malleable and you physically leave a three-dimensional impression, that is known as a plastic print. Now that we can't lift because it's a different thing entirely. What we'll do is we'll put something called microsill. We'll put a goop in there that makes an impression, a negative impression. And from that, we can roll a positive impression. A little bit more work, but it's a beautiful print nonetheless. Today, I have never in my career used one of the new fingerprint scanners. In all honesty, I haven't taken a fingerprint in, I don't know, 100 years. The last time I did, we did printer's ink and a 10 card. They're referred to as 10 cards because there are 10 fingerprints on it. Just for the record, when we talk about finger number one, that is your right thumb. Number two, of course, is the first finger. Number three, your middle finger. Number four, your ring finger. Number five, your pinky. Number six is your left thumb. And the sequence goes on. And that's how fingers are numbered. So now we have a 10 card. The new digital scanner is totally cool. What they do is you'll scan a fingerprint on a plate of glass or on some sort of a sensitive medium where the computer picks it up, and it's recorded that way. I guess one is just as good as another. The fingerprint is usually rolled, what we call nail to nail. We start with the finger facing to the right on the edge of the nail. We roll it until the other side of the nail comes up, and that's a full fingerprint. From the tip of the finger down to the first joint, they go into the database, and forever and ever, you are there. I don't even know if there's something in place for those people who are deceased. Honestly, the fingerprint files at the FBI numbers in the millions and millions and millions. I don't know if they purge them. I have no clue. I have to assume they must. What the heck's the sense of keeping fingerprints on file from Genghis Khan? I've never used the electronic one, as I've mentioned, so my experience has been with the old system. Fingerprints for the longest time, sweet. In Massachusetts, we used to use 8 points. If we had 8 points that matched, we considered that a dead match, a connection. Different countries, different jurisdictions have different rules. But one thing I can say is DNA is all fine and dandy. It's modern science. It's wonderful. Fingerprints have been around forever. We have never found two fingerprints alike. And that stands to this day. You can get fingerprints from a mummified body. We can get fingerprints from a fetus who's not yet viable in gestation. Fingerprints are developed at around the first trimester. So we can truthfully say your fingerprints will outlast your mortal being. We can get your fingerprints before you are viable. We can get your fingerprints long after you're gone. AJ4, I see.
Well, thank you so much for that, Armand. At this point, I'm going to make some call out there for check-ins.
November, X-ray India. Well, good evening again, Kathy, and everybody aboard. Yeah, I ended up at the police station a couple times when I was a kid and had my fingerprints done the old-fashioned way, and it was just like Armand described. They roll your finger from one side of your fingernail to the other and dip it in the ink, and then you roll it on the paper the same way. But I did have a question for them. Whenever they do your fingerprints, and if you try to help them roll your finger, they don't like that. They like to physically roll your finger themselves. I was just wondering what the reason for that was. If you roll it yourself, does that mess something up? And again, great net. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Okay. We, and again, the generic we, law enforcement, like to do it because we know what's acceptable and what is not. We know what part is important, what part isn't. That's why we want to do it. Number two, if you have somebody under arrest who tries to do it themselves, there's a good possibility they may very well try to smudge it or mess it up. And that's just not acceptable, obviously. You need a good, clean set of prints. That's why. It has to be nail to nail, as we say. And from the first joint, which is just down below the tip of the finger, to the tip of the finger, so that when we roll it, it looks almost square. And that's what we're looking for. More detail, the better. Because truth of the matter is, on television and in movies, when detectives or technicians lift a fingerprint, it's always gorgeous. Might as well have left their driver's license behind for the love of Pete. Truth of the matter is, in reality, most of the time at crime scenes, we have partial fingerprints or smudges, and we only have some areas to work with. So if we have a good print to begin with in the database, it's much easier to match it up. That's the reason.
All right, Armand, I sort of thought that, someone having their fingerprints done can easily fight the person trying to do it. So I thought that was the reason.
And that makes perfect sense. I guess I should have figured that would be so that you didn't try to mess them up or smudge it. W81NXI, back to net.
I'm going to throw it back to you, Armand, AJ4IC.
Well, Kathy, I thoroughly enjoyed this. Obviously, I have the gift of gab. That can't be denied. This is my chosen profession. I love what I do. I giggle every week when they actually pay me to do this. However, as you and I discussed before we did this TNT, we knew it was going to perhaps run over, and DNA, of course, was going to probably rule the night. But really quick, let me skim over a couple of things I would like to cover before we hang it up. One of the things you'd mentioned to me was shoe prints and tire tracks at a crime scene. Have they any evidentiary value? The answer is yes and no, like everything else. Shoes and tires, depending upon which medium they are left in. If it's sugar sand, and here in Florida, as you know, but for all others, sugar sand is sort of like beach sand. You can step in it, and it really doesn't leave a great footprint. It leaves kind of a general footprint. Well, that's a perfect lead-in, because footprints, tire tracks, are divided into two categories. One is called class evidence, and the other is individual evidence. Class evidence means experts in that particular field can probably look at a footprint and say, this is clearly a Nike sneaker, and it's probably a size 10. That's the best they can do. That's called class evidence. If, however, you leave your sneaker mark in mud and it dries and it's a beautiful thing, that becomes individual evidence,
Now those experts can do a casting and not only say it is a Nike size 10, but they can say it is absolutely a dead match for the particular shoes worn by this defendant. So there's your difference. Class evidence, very loosey-goosey. Individual evidence, dead on. Okay. Blood stain. We can absolutely go to a crime scene where there is blood spatter on the wall, on the floors, on the ceiling, and we can reconstruct what happened with very, very basic mathematics. We use trigonometry. It's just that simple. We can tell where a person was standing when they were shot, where they were stabbed, where they were bludgeoned. We can tell all this by the blood pattern on the wall. We measure the width of the blood stain, individual droplets. We measure the length, and using trig and very basic fluid dynamics, we can tell where it came from, the angle of attack, and the direction from which it came. So if someone was sitting down, and he was struck twice, and then fell over unconscious on the floor, and was continuously beaten with a baseball bat or whatever, we can tell all that. It is so simple. It's a joke. And it's basic, basic fluid dynamics. And that's as far as I'm going with that.
Well, you covered the majority of it there, Armand. I didn't think you were going to go that far. But the only other thing I think we talked about was about how you evaluate different crimes, you know, collecting data. What do you do with that data?
Okay, Kathy, well, honestly, because this is my chosen field, I love this, and I have the tendency to ramble on ad infinitum. We can do this again. Absolutely. No problem at all. It's you know, it's like somebody asking you, would you mind explaining the meaning of life? To try to cover forensic sciences in a matter of an hour or two. Wow. Where do we begin? Everybody has a thousand questions, and rightly so. And it is something that takes a long time because of its depth, its breadth. It just covers so much. And as a general practitioner, I know perhaps more than Joe average, but by no means the plethora of experts out there in individual fields. As I mentioned earlier, it's kind of like medical school, you know? You come out a general practitioner, but then you find your little niche, and off you go. I hope we've been able to tickle the imagination and the interest of a bunch of people. I am not the definitive answer to all of your questions. As I've mentioned, I'm just a practitioner. But it's been my life for a number of years. I love what I do. I love talking about it. And let's just leave it at that. This is AJ4IC. Back to you, Kathy.
Well, Armand, thank you so much for being part of the program and for fielding all the questions. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I value your time. So with that, I'm going to throw this out to the general audience, anyone in the earshot of my voice.
Holy my, Charlie Bravo.
6, Vicar.
RYB.
So let me start with you, LCB.
Well, thank you, Kathy, and thank you for doing the Ned, great Ned Armand, and by all means, thank you, Brian, absolutely great there. And you kind of renewed my outlook on things as far as there's still a few general practitioners left around there. Not throwing down on specialists, but I want to talk to somebody who can tell me the whole story, not part of it there. I appreciate learning all I can about it there, because we're getting old and we're moving into a fast world. What can I say? KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
KY6B, please come aboard.
KY6B here. I've just got one last short question for Armin. Armin, you need to know that I'm a very inquisitive person, number one. My question to you, sir, is very simple. Not being in the groove. When we talk DNA, are we talking the analysis, Armand, of is the display in chromosomes? Is the display in genes? And I suppose I could probably research this, but I'd rather just ask the question and save the trouble. What is the term that is used for the final individual characteristic of a DNA, sir? Over.
Ah, now we're getting into the nuts and bolts. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a piece of chain, the type of chain that's used on your boat as a safety chain to hook up to your car, or the type of chain that is used as a small scope on your anchor for your boat. We're talking 1-inch links. Now, let's go to an abandoned airport with a long runway. Let's lay out about a mile of this chain, remembering each link is about 1 inch long. Now, I'm going to give you 4 cans of paint. It doesn't matter. Let's use the colors of our flag. Red, white, and blue. And then let's be green. No pun intended. We'll use green. So we have red, white, blue, and green. Now, I'm going to put you on your knees. I'm going to put you at the beginning of this chain with these 4 cans of paint. And I'm going to tell you to paint each link a color. Whether you use the same color over and over again, or you change every single time, it doesn't matter. Here's the scoop. The first link you come across, I'm going to say to you, Gordon, would you paint this link? Well, you have 4 choices. You can make it green, red, white, or blue. You have 4 choices. The second link, same situation. You can paint that 4 different colors. The third link, the fourth link, the fifth link, totally random. Paint them any color you want. By the time we get out to 16 links, we are talking billions of possible combinations. Billions of possible combinations. We are talking the length of this chain, which we've arbitrarily assigned as about a mile long. We are talking a piece that runs from your fingertip to your elbow. Good grief. Billions. If we stretch this out on and on and on, we have more people than have ever lived on this blue marble. That blows me away. That, sir, is science. That is DNA. That's why I am so freaked out over this whole thing.
My question to you, sir, is what do I call that link? Do I call that a chromosome? Do I call it a gene? Do I call it something else? Over.
Aha! That's what I missed. The chromosome, sir, is the entire length of chain. In this case, we've arbitrarily assigned 1 mile. The gene is that small section that we just described, the 18 inches. Here's the thing. Along that entire length of chain, which is your chromosome, within each cell of your body. Not only that, within the nucleus. Each gene is located in a different area along the chromosome. And the people who do this for a living know exactly what to look for and in what area. That blows me away.
So the whole 9 yards of spaghetti is called a chromosome. Every 16 links is called a gene. What is one individual link called, sir? Over.
Good point. gee whiz. Just a base, I guess. That's the simplest thing. Because the base, as we mentioned with the four colors, we said red, white, blue, and green, so there are four bases. Without getting into it too deeply, they are known as guanine, cytosine, thymine, and adenine. No reason to go there. Simply referred to as C, G, T, and A. So each one is a base. T and A, C or G. Only four. Let's look at the first link. You have four choices. You can paint it any color you want. Let's look at the second link. Same situation. But guess what? After you've only painted two links, there are 16 possible combinations. Then the third, then the fourth, then the fifth. By the time you get to the 15th or 16th around there, we are talking 4 billion possible combinations. That's why DNA, if we have a good sample of DNA, we can say that this particular DNA matches the DNA of the suspect to the exclusion of everyone who has ever lived on the face of this blue marble. And that is totally wild.
Thank you so much for that description, both of you. I'm probably thoroughly lost at this point, but I'll get back to it. Thank you, Armand, for your explanation, Gordon, for your questions and your participation this evening. So at this point, I'm going to throw it over to Brian, RYB.
Okay, WB2RYB. Very good. Doctor, I do have a question. I think you mentioned at the start that you were into maybe photography or video or something like that. I know Uncle Sam, Big Brother, National Security, is coming up with software to map a human face, which I'm assuming probably uses a mapping vector point into a database, and they could pick out an individual that is wanted or something like that through a database. I know we use DNA fingerprints, you know, blood chemistries, the iris of the eyes, but how is that going? I know at one time they were developing it, and then it kind of stalled a little bit because of some complications.
Brian, very briefly, yes, indeed. I have seen that on the Internet. I have never used it. I am aware of its existence, and you're absolutely right. It's an algorithm, and it works kind of like fingerprint recognition in APHIS. It makes an algorithm of the face and pinpoints a whole bunch of things. I've never used it. I know it's out there, and like I said, being in science, you can never be bored. Good grief. 10 minutes from now, everything we said may be ancient science. AJ4IC.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor.
So with that, I'm going to call for any other check-ins that would like to come aboard. Just say hi.
Delta King George. One India.
Delta King George, Paul, it's been a long time. Please come aboard.
Well, good evening, Kathy, and everybody on the net. Gordon, Norman, and Brian. You guys did a fantastic job. Believe me, when I tell you, you've done a fantastic job. And as you said, Armin, before, that there's too much the NCIS, and CIS is on TV. And it's just not that way in real life. It just doesn't happen. Number one is fast and is accurate. And with the, I think they eliminated about half of the steps that are involved in anything as far as determining what they're looking for and coming up with a solution. And as far as the, you were speaking of APHIS, and I know here in Pennsylvania, there is an APHIS network, and it will bring back possible hits from the search that it has conducted, but then it takes a live fingerprint examiner to make the final determination, as well as an additional expert to verify that before it can be used in court. I know that for a fact. Remember one sign I saw one time, crime is not solved in an hour minus commercials. Great job, guys. Kathy, back to you, and 3DKG.
Well, Paul, thanks so much, and I know you're in law enforcement, so that was great for you to come aboard this evening. Paul, thanks so much for coming back aboard.
Well, thank you for that, Kathy, and I just wanted to thank Armin and the other gentlemen, too, for the net tonight. So thanks to everybody who worked so hard putting it together, and it's a fascinating topic, to be sure.
Well, thank you, Paul, for coming aboard, and you'll enjoy listening to the recording.
Delta King, King George, for a question. What do you think, or do you know anything about the forensic composite part?
Indeed. There's a fellow I work with. His name is Steve Fusco. First name Steven with a PH. Steven Fusco. He's originally from Connecticut. Works with me here in forensics down at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. He is a forensic artist. He does skull reconstruction. He is fantastic. He has a website called, I believe, forensicartist.com. However, worst case scenario, if you need to contact him or find out more about him, you could probably do it at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. And again, his name is Steven Fusco. The man is awesome.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Armin, for that. That sounds like a interesting topic as well. Thank you once again, everyone. So, Armin, any final comments you'd like to make before we close the net this evening?
Thank you, Kathy. It was a bit difficult doing the lecture without PowerPoint. However, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. It was fun. Thank you so much for having me, and if we can be of some assistance to you in the future to spread the word, by all means, give me a call. Thanks an awful lot. All of you who participated, the questions were great. I hope you learned something. It was fun. This is Alpha Juliet 4, India Charlie, and I am SK. Good night, all.
So this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VOIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been myself, Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, saying 73, closing this VOIP session. Thank you very much for your participation and your contacts tonight. The net is now closed. Have a great evening, great weekend ahead of you, and hopefully we'll see you on this weekend's net. This is Kilo 60 Yuri United November, saying good night to one and all.